Good evening, everybody, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio on the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounge, is your host of Midwest Beat, and this show, as you know, is all about music and the people who make it. And tonight, we've got a gentleman who's been making music for a good many decades. In fact, I was just a youngin' when I first saw him, and I've been a fan ever since. And one of the first singer-songwriters from the region that I remember becoming a big fan of, and he's got a brand new album. It's been a while, and he's brought a lovely lady with him. They're going to sing, we're going to talk, and we're just going to have a good time tonight. It's just a party on the air, and you're invited right here on Midwest Beat. So, let's get to it. Eric Lambert, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Now, it has been a long time, and we happened to run into each other at through Greg Ashby and the guys over at the Art Theater. I hadn't seen you in a while. What have you been up to?
Well, I've been writing songs.
As you always have.
I've been writing songs and focusing more on writing songs than I ever have. Even when I was writing years ago on the earlier discs, I was playing guitar and writing songs that the guitar could play to, more than I was writing songs as a songwriter, I think.
Interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, I was always a guitar player first.
When did that evolution start happening, where you started switching gears on that?
When I began hanging out at the Folk Alliance functions, Folk Alliance International.
I am not familiar with that. Is that kind of like the old town school, something like that?
Well, something like that, but okay. It's an organization that's worldwide. And they have conventions, one international convention every year, usually in early February, this year in late January. And they have regional conventions. The Midwestern portion of that is called FARM, Folk Alliance Region Midwest. There's a NERFA, the Northeast Region Folk Alliance, a SERFA, the Southeast Folk Alliance. You know,
it's a whole can of worms.
It's a whole can of worms, and it's maybe it is a bit underground. It was a bit underground until I became aware of it. And now, of course, it's just a regular thing to us. But attending these conventions and showcasing at these conventions and stuff like that, there's a lot of playing and singing.
And a lot of networking, I'm imagining.
And a lot of networking. Everything folk music, you know, that doesn't fall into the IBMA, the bluegrass category. And then, of course, there's Americana music now. So it's all beginning to splinter a little bit. And what you hear a lot of at Folk Alliance gatherings and conventions are songwriters. And I started attending these things. And one night in particular, after watching Tim Grimm perform and listening to his tunes.
I'm familiar with Tim.
John Smith from Trempealeau, Wisconsin. I started hearing songs that moved me. They touched me and affected me, and I wanted my songwriting to become that. So I went down to Asheville and attended the Southeast version of all of this. And my thought, of course, was to get a one-on-one with Carrie Estrin out of Nashville, who is a manager, consultant, radio promotion, a gal who wears a lot of hats. And she had she has a program that you can get involved in, and she'll take you from beginning of song, collecting songs, writing them all, completing the project, taking it to radio, so on and so forth. So I did get an audience with Carrie, and I said, "Will you take me on?" And she said, "Yeah." So I was thrilled, listened to Tony Rice all the way home, top down on the Mustang,
yep,
and sent her my song, sent her what was going on. And we took those songs, you know, songs that she categorized as good songs, but kind of boring to her. How do I take them to the next level? And that's what we've been working on.
Okay, now are these the songs that will eventually be on the new album coming out in April?
This is the new album.
It is, okay.
This is the new album with a couple of instrumentals that have been, that I've been doing for a long time.
So how did you tweak them from being good but boring to being good enough to put on album and invest money and time in as you have?
Well,
what's the secret?
These songs actually started from scratch, and what she taught me how to do was go deeper, how to tell a story, and how to tell it in a way that it will be more accessible to a bigger range of people. I don't know exactly how to explain it other than that.
Okay.
The tunes I used to write were good songs.
I thought so.
Yeah. And they told stories, but these are deeper. And these...
More soul-bearing?
More soul-bearing.
Okay.
Of course, I had to do a lot of work on myself.
Right.
And get through some barriers and get through some resistance to where I could tell my story and that of others just deeper in a way that it might touch you.
There's a lot of vulnerability in certain songwriters' work, and one that comes to mind is Amy Mann. I love Amy's work.
Mm-hmm.
She really bears her soul, and she really opens up in a way that I don't think I could as a person playing to the world. Is that hard to do? I mean, obviously you have kind of come to that preface.
I won't say that it's hard to do, because if that's what you want to do,
mm-hmm,
that's what you'll accomplish, you know. But it definitely required doing some work on myself, looking deeper inside than I had.
How do you look back at your songs now that you had for the earlier albums?
They're guitar songs.
Okay. still proud of them. They're still your children.
Still proud of them. They're my children, but they were vehicles to play the guitar.
Okay. Very good. We're going to play a song in just a moment here, because you do have that wonderful guitar. But first, there's another person in the room.
Yes,
and that
there
is Char. And Char, I am not super familiar with you, so tell us a little bit about yourself and how you wound up working and hanging with this guy.
Well, I've known Eric for 20-plus years. Kind of just recently started hanging out every day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, about 4 years now. And I I've done a lot. I have a multitude of things I do. I'm a reverend, ordained minister. I do Reiki. But I've always sung in the car, and I've always wanted to sing, but I could never get to that point.
Okay.
And for some reason and somehow, I ended up starting to sing with Eric, and now I'm like gung-ho.
So he kind of pulled that out of you a little bit?
Yes, because
okay.
I've never been able to sing in front of people. I've always been a car singer, and so now I'm enjoying being in front of people.
What was it, Eric, that made you realize she had the talent to do this?
I'm not sure I realized anything.
Because obviously you said you knew each other 20 years, and this is a new experience for both of you working together professionally.
Well, I'm sure spirit is behind all of this. 4 years ago, we went to lunch together,
mm-hmm,
for the first time, and 4 years later, we're singing songs together.
Are you writing with Eric, too?
Yes.
Okay.
We started writing some songs, and it's fun. It's exciting. It gets a little testy and a little fun, and you know, but
beat each other up once in a while.
Yeah, not that bad. That, but,
okay.
Yeah, but you're just trying to come up with something, and you're like, you know, so it's a little testier,
okay.
But it's fun.
Now, Char, are you on the new album?
I actually go into the studio tomorrow to do some recording.
So this is your baptism of fire, so to speak.
It is.
First recording session?
Yeah, well, I went into one.
Okay.
With Thunderclap. And this will be the second time I will be in a recording studio, so yes.
Ooh.
I'm freshly new to everything, so I'm just like...
That's going
to
make you feel a little bit giddy, at least.
hanging on.
Love those new experiences. Well, do you want to do something?
Absolutely.
What do you want to play?
This is the song that I wrote, inspired by Ethel Polk, who I met in Chicago when she was 99. I played at that birthday party, and I've played at everyone since, and she's now 103.
Wow.
We're looking forward to playing at her birthday party again in the spring. And Carrie said to me, I told her I was kind of stuck, and she said, well, look for something of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Ethel Polk was a perfect inspiration to write a tune about. And this is called I'll Dance When I'm 100.
All right. Eric Lambert live on Midwest Beat. You're listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
2, 3, 4. When I was growing up, folks told me what to do. Sit up straight, don't be late, don't be a clown in school. We'll teach you how to be a man, grow up and act your age. Not too much further down the road, I learned to turn the page. By the time that I turned 30, I was living the so-called dream. Job and debt, credit cards, that same old corporate scene. So I sold my stuff, bought a van, and headed for the coast. Somewhere in Colorado, I poured myself a toast.
Said I'll dance when I'm 100, swim the deep blue sea. Live up on a mountain, keep my spirit free. Age is just a number, it won't define me. I'll dance when I'm 100. Come on, dance with me.
I'd like to play the fiddle, I said to my friend Vern. My man, he said, you're 50 and it's too late to learn. So I went down to the music shop, hung out with Fiddlin' Roy. Now I'm playing old Joe Clark, learning soldier's joy.
Said I'll dance when I'm 100, swim the deep blue sea. Live up on a mountain, keep my spirit free. Age is just a number, it won't define me. I'll dance when I'm 100, come on dance with me.
With more memories than sense. But I keep on pushing forward, I'm not sitting on the fence. I've got a brand new girlfriend, we love and sing all day. When we finally settle down, there's just one thing to say.
Said I'll dance when I'm 100, swim the deep blue sea. Live up on a mountain, keep my spirit free. Age is just a number, it won't define me. I'll dance when I'm 100. Come on, dance with me. Said I'll dance when I'm 100. Come on, dance with me.
Eric and Char, live on the Lakeshore. Good stuff. Dancing when I'm 100. Has Ethel heard that?
Yes, a couple times.
Has she danced?
As best she can.
All right. Excellent stuff. That is a fun song.
Well, thanks.
You know, I'm the same way. I felt like the guy that wanted to be a fiddler. I keep telling myself, you know, back in high school, I wanted to learn guitar, I wanted to learn drums. My dad said, no, you can't. There's no future in music. Mm. So I never got to take the lessons. And I've promised myself, one day I'm going to learn. One day I'm going to learn. Well, that day has never come. And now I'm sitting here at 60, and he's like, he's 50. He played fiddle. I can do it.
Yeah.
It's an inspirational song. I like that.
And how interesting that everything you've done has been in music. You've been involved
I'm
in
frustrated musician.
Music.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what drove me to this, is the fact that I am a frustrated musician. And I know I can't really carry a tune. So at least instrumentation or a microphone to talk.
Well, we're all grateful that you took the path you took.
Now, one of the things that that has always, the partnerships that you forge when you're in music and any creative art form is always something that helps define the finished product. And obviously you have a new muse and a new ally here with Char, but for years you have worked with John Carpenter. In fact, your albums is what made me realize who John was, because I'm like, this sounds great. And then I saw recorded in Hammond. I'm like, who has a studio in Hammond that can make it sound like this?
Yeah.
The warmth and the ambience and everything that was on your early albums really impressed me. And that was when I really started noticing that you don't have to go to a fancy studio to get the sound. You just have to have the right ears. And John Carpenter's got some gifts.
John's got the right ears.
Yep.
And John is, Thunderclap Recording is a first class studio. What you don't have to do is travel and pay an exorbitant rate to sound like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do it right here in the region at Thunderclap Recording with John. He sounds better now than ever.
I agree. Some of the Jeff Sarver stuff he's done is just brilliant. Another great songwriter.
That latest Nomad Planets album.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds extraordinary.
So what is it that drew you to John, and when did you know he was the right creative partner with you? And what does he bring to the projects? What kind of fingerprints does he leave on your work?
Well,
that's a lot of questions in that little ball I just threw at you there. So.
You know, first of all, Spirit was working in my life when I didn't even realize it, because it walked me. I owned a home at the time, a half a block away.
Hmm.
And I don't know if we saw an ad in the Beat magazine. I don't know exactly what it was, but I just ended up in John's studio 30 years ago. And much like Char, I know that Char is the person in my life that I'm supposed to be with the rest of my life. John was the engineer that I was supposed to work with and work with for the rest of my life. You just know.
Mm-hmm.
You just know, I guess.
It's been such a wonderful run for the two of you. I'm so excited to hear this new album because of that kinship, that relationship. But it's been a while since you released something. So how has the dynamics, how has the process evolved? Because you've already started the recording process.
We're in the mixing process right now.
Okay.
What has evolved? Well, we don't have to say a lot to each other.
Okay, you got that osmosis thing going on? Okay.
I mean, we do say a lot to each other, but it's mostly about how are we doing, what's going on, what was your weekend like, how was the shows with the Planets. You know, I see you and Char were on the road this weekend. And then once we get to work, not a lot needs to be said. You know, how was that take? Well, we both know.
Mm-hmm.
It was either special or we need to try another one, because we pretty much know each other.
What does he add as far as a creative outer source? Because the songs are very personal. You write them, you record them, you sing them, but you have that outside ear. Are there things that sometimes you miss that he can say, why don't we try this? Or I don't like the way you did that, so maybe try it this way. I mean, a good producer doesn't step on the artist, but they enhance it. It's like a little seasoning on a steak.
Him and I are balance.
Okay.
And if I miss something or don't hear something, or there's another idea to use in the recording, that all usually comes from John. Whatever I miss, he's got it.
Okay.
If we're stuck on a spot, he'll come up with a solution. We just have a good give and take, and we usually arrive at the same place.
All right. Let's flash back a little bit, actually a long time ago. You mentioned working with John over 30 years now. You've been playing music on the local music scene here for at least 40 years, right?
Yes.
Because I'm thinking how long I've been in it, and I've been in about 45 years, and I think you were there before I was, so at least 40 years. What is it that drew young Eric to music? This has become your life. That guitar, the songs are a part of who you are. It's your soul. It's your heart. When did that start? I mean, we all at some point find our path. When did you know in your heart of hearts that music is my calling?
Well, probably by the time I was 16. And I stopped once or twice along the way, trying to make myself do something else. But it was always the thing I was supposed to do. No doubt about it.
Was there one or two things that drew you to it? I mean, a lot of people of our era said, oh, we saw the Beatles and that made me want to pick up a guitar. But you've never hit me as that kind of musician. You are a deeper kind of guy. And I know you were into the Dead and you're into Robert Hunter and a lot of the folkies and John Hartford. What was it that made you, who was it that made you say, that's really cool stuff. I want to do that.
Well, you know, in the beginning, it was the rock and roll guys, of course. But then it was the record, Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
Okay.
You know, where the Dirt Band teamed up with people I was listening to for the first time now. Mm-hmm. You know, Mother Maybelle was on that first record. Doc Watson was on that first record.
You're talking about that double album, correct?
Triple album.
Triple album.
Three
albums. I remember
that. The original was three albums. Merle Travis for the first time. I heard Jimmy Martin sing for the first time. What an eye-opener that is. And that doesn't mean I've forgotten about Duane Allman,
mm-hmm,
or Dickie Betts or the Brothers. But this took me in a different direction. And I heard Norman Blake on that record. I heard Earl Scruggs, not for the first time, but, you know, hanging around with that group.
Mm-hmm.
That was really special to hear Earl do what he did. And Vassar.
Vassar Clemons?
Vassar for the first time.
You know, he played at Point East.
I know he did.
Yeah. Well, you were probably there in the front row, right next to the table to meet where that was at.
He was there.
Yeah.
And that started changing things. I still played electric guitar a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this happened to me twice. When I started playing old-timey type music and when I played the blues, I think I found my home. And I see both of those types of music as being very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps the only thing separating them back in the day was that set of railroad tracks. Which, of course, you know, Duane and all of those guys
crossed those tracks, like Elvis did. Yep.
Yep, without a problem. And then Soul got into the music, you know. And, it's those two styles. Because old-timey music has a real soul to it.
Mm-hmm. I remember Greg Allman telling me early on when I interviewed him, and I didn't quite wrap my head around it at the time, but he said he used to go out and he would sit on this old guy's porch. And the guy was kind of like the town misfit, I guess. Nobody really talked to him, but he always had that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd sit there. And every waking moment he could get away from his mom or whatever, he would sit on that porch and just watch that guy play. And he said that was his introduction. That's how he learned to do some of the stuff he did.
Yeah.
And he got his soul from that.
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing. These are people that never probably made a nickel with their music. And but yet they influenced generations.
It's true, it's true, it's true. In my case, I was living back in the trailer court when I was a young guy. And a kid down the block had a guitar. And that was my first experience. Then we moved to the other end of town. And there were two or three guys playing. And Mike Perpich was my primary influence. He taught me a lot of things. And I eventually joined his band.
Mm-hmm.
And and started playing, you know, covers off the radio. So there was a lot of influence locally. And then, of course, the Glenn Campbell Good Time
Hour. Good Time Hour, yeah.
John Hartford was on that program. Yep. Glenn Campbell himself, a great picker.
Underrated. Nobody realizes all the sessions that we love that he was playing, but he didn't get the credit or recognition for.
He played with those Los Angeles guys, the Wrecking Crew, and on the Beach Boys records and stuff like that. But then I don't remember when I heard Lucille by Little Richard. Seems like it was on TV, though. I don't know if it was one of the Dick Clark shows or what it was. But
could have even been the old Alan Freed show before he got kicked off the air.
Yeah. But, you know, if you didn't feel that, then
then
you were wearing a suit of concrete. And then there was Walking Through Gold Blast with my mom and hearing The Thrill Is Gone, piped in into the other department store, you know. All of those things. And then back when our friend Dwayne, Terry Shockley, turned us on to the Allman Brothers, and you got to hear this guy and this slide guitar guy and how these guitars play in harmony together. And then it was that.
Mm-hmm.
Another huge eye-opening and ear-opening experience.
Wow. You mentioned when we first started the show today, folk music, Americana, old-timey. Today, and how it was splintering. Today, we hear those terms interlaced all the time. Ever since Oh Brother came out, and Mumford & Sons, and Yvette Brothers, and all these guys are bringing out the string instruments again, kind of taking it full circle. We're hearing Americana, country, folk. It's blending into this strange mishmash. As someone that grew up with the icons, and it was the purest thing, you know, folk music was pure. And then, of course, Dylan plugged in, and all these other guys started doing things, and Mike Bloomfield got in, and then it became blues and folk and all these bastardizations of the music, which, of course, was creative. But as a purist, someone that grew up with pure flat pick and guitar and Merle Travis and these kind of people, how do you look at that now? Are you happy the way it's progressed? And how do you define what Americana is anymore? Is it country? Is it folk? What is it?
Well, I remember attending the IBMA a few years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty much straight ahead traditional bluegrass. And then when I was on the road with the Hen House Prowlers, we decided to attend our first Folk Alliance International in Memphis. And we went there and played and showcased. But at that conference, I saw songwriters, I saw instrumentalists, I saw groups from Ireland, I saw the Sacred Steel, which were five steel guitar players playing gospel. I started to see what I categorized to myself as world music.
Okay.
And the majority of it was Americana, because it was from the States, but because it contained bluegrass and folk music and rock and roll and gospel and the blues. And it was just that big pot of gumbo, man. And I thought to myself, I finally have found a place.
Mm-hmm.
Because there really weren't any restrictions on the music. And you could walk into one showcase room and see a Delta blues player. And you can walk into another showcase room and see Tim Grimm for the first time, singing that Americana from Southern Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And you could walk into a room and hear Irish fiddlers with traditional instruments, you know, with boras and with whistles. And, of course, it's Americanized because these folks are all
right,
born and bred here. Anyway, that experience changed the way I looked at a lot of things. And, you know, touring with Valerie Smith helped change a lot of the way I looked at a lot of things, and touring with the Prowlers as well.
Henhouse Prowlers, what a cool name for a band.
It's a great name.
I love that name.
It's a great name.
And you did a lot of touring with them, and you played for a few years with them.
Yeah.
And then you did Hartsfield for a while, and you did Valerie, and now you're back doing Eric.
Now I'm doing Eric and Char.
That's, I beg to, forgiveness there.
Well,
that's true.
And I mention that because all of a sudden the next logical step or next logical direction, my playing and singing is supposed to go is with Char.
Well, let's do another song then.
Let's do
it. All right. Eric and Char live on Midwest Beats at Lakeshore Public Radio. You're listening at 89.1 FM.
How about we do that John Prine song that you have suggested? Really warms you up and gets you to a good place.
All right.
And this is a common song to you and I, but it's hard to imagine it's 50 years old.
And he's still cranking them out.
He's still cranking them out.
At the best yet.
When I was a young girl, I had me a cowboy. He wasn't much to look at, just a free rambling man. But that was a long time. No matter how I tried, those years they flew by like a broken down dam. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing I can hold on to believe in this living is just a hard way to go. There's flies in the kitchen, I can hear them buzzing. I ain't done nothing since I woke up today. How the hell can a person go to work in the morning, come home in the evening, and have nothing to say? Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing I can hold on to believe in this living is just a hard way to go. To believe in this living is just a hard way to go.
Taking the music of an old postman from Chicago. And 50 years later, still sounding beautiful, still being able to be interpreted in fresh ways.
Mm-hmm.
That is the sign of an excellent song.
It's a great song, no doubt.
Now, as someone who's reinvented his own songwriting, and you look back at some of these old favorites, do you see what you've learned in some of those songs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The old songs, well, I've learned everything from what has come before me.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing a song like Angel from Montgomery at the level that I can hear it now, as compared to the level that I used to listen to it at, is hugely different. Hugely different.
I have found as I've gotten older, a lot of the artists that I enjoyed as a young person are sounding different. I'm hearing new things, fresh things. All Emmylou Harris being one of them. I liked her, but now I just love her voice and the nuances and the way she interprets things. Some of these artists, I mean, you think, yeah, they're pretty good, and she's good looking too. You know, when you're a young man, you think like a young man. But now I listen to the songs. And some of that, Roseanne Cash is another one, the way she interprets songs. Not just a pretty voice, although she has one, it's the way they sing it. It's kind of the magic of Sinatra, the phrasing and the attack of the words in the songs that make them unique and make them work. I could sing it and I would suck. You guys sing it and people would applaud because of the way you interpret it.
It's learning how to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. To paint the pictures, to have the right brushes.
Mm-hmm. And with maturity comes that more discerning ear.
So there's hope for Jose yet, our engineer.
I'll tell you, I have probably listened to the record live at Fillmore East more than any other in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's new things in there every time.
There is a new album out from the Allmans, recorded in 1970, just came out.
Fillmore West.
Yes.
Four discs.
It's another one of those lost gems that now we can embrace and appreciate all over again.
Yep.
The brilliance of people like Dwayne.
Absolutely. You know, Dwayne is credited with writing one song in his career with the Allman Brothers, and that's Little Martha.
Mm-hmm.
But his compositional skills on the spot, in the moment, to me are as important as writing these songs.
Dwayne was known for his slide work, one of the best. You have been recognized for flat picking. A lot of people that don't know music may not understand the different styles of guitar. And I don't want this to turn into an educational forum, but what exactly, in a nutshell, are some of the different styles of playing? Because you play a variety of styles. But flat picking is your calling card.
That's what I've been more related to the last 15 or 20 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, of course, from hearing Doc Watson on that Circle Be Unbroken album. And then discovering more and more, like the first time I heard Tony Rice, I said, oh, no, wait a minute. Doc was great doing what he was doing, but Tony Rice is doing it a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on a Tony Rice journey for years. And then, of course, from Tony Rice, I was led to Clarence White, the ex-Bird, who, before playing electric guitar with Roger McGuinn, played flat pick style acoustic guitar with the Kentucky Colonels, his brother Rowan, and two or three other guys who made the Kentucky Colonels such a huge influence. If you go down that rabbit hole, there mm-hmm. they are. They're very close to the top of it. And then, you know, all of that led me to places like Sam Bush and Mark O'Connor and Jerry Douglas and Bela Fleck and the whole Newgrass scene.
Which is mostly the 70s that started, wasn't it? The Newgrass revival?
The original Newgrass revival, who recorded on Flying Fish out of Chicago, was a 1970s phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that hit the second version of it with Bela and John Cowan, well, John Cowan was there the first time around, but Bela and Pat Flynn, who recorded and some of the smaller labels, but then hit big, I believe, with Warner Brothers. You know, they were going for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't quite get the airplay and the support in the end. You know?
They were a little ahead of the curve. A lot ahead of the curve, actually.
There's not anything going to be called jam grass.
Right.
You know, without the Newgrass revival of the mid-80s. That's where that was born. Sam today is known as the father of Newgrass.
Is Sam still living, Sam Bush?
Sam is still living and touring.
Wow. I just had...
I think he's headlining this year's Hartford Festival.
Okay.
And John Cowan is on the bill also.
Wow. We just had Chris Hillman on the show not long ago.
Oh, so good.
Spent a lot of time with him up at the Acorn, and he did a lot of the Desert Rose stuff,
yeah.
The Bird stuff, his solo stuff, Manassas. I mean, you look at some of these guys, you know, and the impact they had and how many groups they could play with, kind of like you, and then come back and do it all over again with their own band. You know, it's like you don't wear out. It's not like a car tire. You can go around and you can be as creative like John Prine.
Mm-hmm.
Winning Grammys at his age after all the medical conditions. You can't dampen the spirit. And I'm looking at you, Eric, and I've known you a long time, and I see something new in you. I mean, you just seem a lot more vibrant than even you were in 2015, 16. I think the wow. last time you were here.
Well, a lot of that has to do with Char. A lot of that has to do with meditation and...
And now a new album coming out?
New album coming out. Letting go of resistance. Not worrying about things.
Mm-hmm.
And allowing. Manifesting and allowing and welcoming opportunities into your life.
With the new album coming out, what is the game plan? What is the marketing plan? What are you going to do? Are you going on the road, the two of you, and playing more? Are you doing the coffee house scene? What are you doing the craft beer places, which happen to be a pretty good place for acoustic music now? The craft beer thing really helped explode a lot of the singer-songwriter stuff because the crafters know what they want and want a uniqueness, and they don't want to hear, you know, cover songs. They want to hear original.
That is all true. The craft beer scene has... been beneficial to mm-hmm. acoustic
as have the coffee houses, because everyone wants the foo-foo drinks and the different things. They want what they want, and they finally don't want to be spoon-fed their coffee, their beer, or their music.
Mm-hmm. All of that is true.
I like that. I like seeing that change in the music scene.
But there's also a thing called the listening scene.
Okay. Yes.
And Northwest Indiana boasts one of the finest rooms at Front Porch Music.
Mm-hmm.
Where we will release this new disc in April, April the 18th. On April the 17th, we'll be in Rockford, Illinois, at another listening room called the Rockford Listening Room, where folks will come in, pull in, have a seat, sit down, and look up at you with eyes that say, okay, what do you got?
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to hear it. Bring it.
Well, you're going to do that this weekend at the Record Bin. Chad just played there from Front Porch.
And notice that. Yeah. He looked great doing it.
Jeff Massey's played there. Ashby's played there. And, you know, people say, oh, you should get a temporary license, get beer, get wine. No. It's about the music. If I have to have beer to draw you to the music, then I don't want to do it. I want the music to draw you like a moth to a flame. And nice. I think it's great. We broadcast it, you know, on our internet station. We can fit about 22 people comfortably in there. We have free coffee, free cookies. It's always free to attend for all ages so that young people can understand what's going on with the music.
Perfect.
And it's been one of the greatest things I've ever done. You know, financially, not so much. But creatively, I'm so proud of that. And I'm so happy that you're going to come. And I'm so excited. This Sunday, you guys are going to be there.
Well, you know, Spirit took me out of Northwest Indiana for many years. When I was on the road with Valerie, when I was on the road with Hartsfield, when I was on the road with the Hen House Prowlers, when I was taken to Folk Alliance and realized that that's where I needed to go, and I was able to play all over the country and in Europe and in Ireland, Germany, Mexico, all of it, Canada. And I got to see the different ways that the music is approached and attended and listened to and performed. And sometimes I notice that there are things happening in other parts of the country that aren't yet happening in Northwest Indiana. And now I'm home and hanging around in the neighborhood again.
Uh-huh.
And here you are putting on a great show over at the Art Theater in Hobart, where you and I got reconnected.
Mm-hmm. And it was all over original music.
All original music.
Mm-hmm.
You take me two doors down to the record bin, and I see a museum that pretty much follows your life.
True.
And all the effort and love you've put into music. And here's this perfect little space for listening.
And it's almost like I walked in there the first time and it's like, this is not going to work. It's just big and it's high and it's got weird juts on it. And yet the acoustics in there are perfect. Every artist has played there. Ellis Paul came in and played there. And
he's top of the line.
He made a point. He was coming from space in Evanston, going out, and he said, I'm stopping there. And he played. And we've had so many great. Jim Peterick has played there, said the same thing, both electric and acoustic. We've had cello players, fiddle players. You know, it's just a classical blast has played there. I mean, it's this beautiful room where anything works, and the people are coming to expect it. And finally, after a year of saying, please come and listen to the artists. They're coming.
Nice.
It took a while. There's been a few times some great artists played to three people. And you know what that's like. I mean, it happens everywhere. But it's frustrating for me that this great talent, and I'm giving them to you people, but you're not coming. It's angering, you know. And then I learned to let go of the anger and just say, I'm going to enjoy it, and so are these three people. And if they don't know it, the rest of them, the heck with them. And then when you kind of throw that anger and that badness away, that bad mojo, people come. And I think we're going to have a good crowd for this Sunday.
I think we'll have a wonderful crowd this Sunday.
218 Main Street, back room. It's free. Come out and see these amazing talents. And in fact, we got time for about one more song. We only got about 6-7 minutes left. This has gone quickly.
It did go fast.
That's a fast hour.
It is. And we're going to have you back. Let's do that now. We're going to have him back with Char. And we're going to actually play the finished album in April. So we'll have a CD release show. We'll have another CD release event at the Record Bin, mm-hmm. in which we'll be having you guys play that. And we'll be spotlighting the album and selling the album and signing the album and taking pictures with fans. And that's what it's all about, getting the fans involved in doing that. So how much time, Jose? We got, what, 6 minutes? About 6 minutes. So let's do another song.
Okay, here's another song from the record.
What's the name of this one?
This is called The Dirt and the Cigarettes.
I like that.
Well, based on a true story, unfortunately, that is well known to a lot of people around the world. It goes like this. One night at my grandma's, I heard footsteps in the house. Was asleep, it was late at night. I was quiet as a mouse. And when he sat down beside me, I acted like he wasn't there. Thank God he's gone and I'm alone, but I'm still scared.
He was a full-grown man, and I was 9 years old. He sat so close to me that my heart went cold. And for 10 long years, it was a tale I couldn't tell. It was the dirt and the cigarettes. I can't forget that smell.
When I was in high school, I made friends in Illinois. I really tried to like them, but I could not feel the joy. And when I asked myself, what did I do wrong? I go back into my memory, but I can't stay long.
He was a full-grown man, and I was 9 years old. He sat so close to me that my heart went cold. And for 10 long years, it was a tale I couldn't tell. It was the dirt and the cigarettes. I can't forget that smell.
How could I tell anybody? I was so ashamed. He said he would hurt me, and I'd be to blame. He sits in jail and he won't hurt you.
He was a full-grown man, and I was 9 years old. He sat so close to me that my heart went cold. And for 10 long years, it was a tale I couldn't tell. It was the dirt and the cigarettes. I can't forget that smell. It was the dirt and the cigarettes. I can't forget that smell.
Dirt and Cigarettes, Eric and Char. Hear more on Sunday, 218 Main Street, downtown Hobart. It's free. Come on out and join us between 4 and 6 p.m. If you can't, listen to the stream, listen to the broadcast at Region Radio, and we'll just come down. We're going to have free coffee. We're going to hang out. We're going to hear stories. We're going to have fun. And is there a website or Facebook page we can give you real quick to people?
EricLambert.com.
Okay.
You can go to, and then we have Eric Lambert and Char on Facebook and Twitter.
All right. Follow them there, and they'll look over the shoulder and look back at you. Look for that album in April. All right, I'm Lounges. We are out of here this Friday. I'll have Shane Evans of the Hobart Art Theater and his staff down here. We're going to talk for 2 hours about what it's been like this year, changing from theater to live music, and what's coming in 2020. Lots of great shows. Don't miss it. That's 1 to 3 right here on Lakeshore. Adios, everybody.